The final AP College Football Top 25 was wrong. The 2025 ACC schedule is coming out tonight. Ohio State's defensive coordinator is going to Penn State. The championship game viewership dropped, and we might know how to fix it. And there's a meeting coming up in New Orleans that may determine changes coming to the CFP.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years.
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to Winning Cures Everything.
Game day, baby. Wake up or get out.
Here's your host.
A confident young man. A superb athlete.
Gary Seegers.
All right, let's get to it. It is Monday, January the 27th, and this is Winning Cures Everything. It's a college football podcast. I'm your host, Gary Seegers. You can find me at GaryWCE on all the different socials, most active on X, of course. And we are streaming to X this time. So join in if you would like to. We haven't done this live in a while, so let's see if we can get people back on board with the live streams. My plan currently is to do these every Monday and Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. No competing with Pate. Knock it out right after work. Podcast goes up the next morning. Easy enough. And then I'll cut the new videos from the live show after that. This is a lot of work for one person, and I do this solo. It's only me. So I would certainly appreciate you being a part of this. As we go along with the new schedule, et cetera, I'm going to have topics for the shows on Mondays and Thursdays, but I do want you guys to be a part of the show. So hop into the chat with any thoughts or any questions. I'm going to be reading and answering those throughout the show. Any super chats that come in, obviously those get first dibs, and I would certainly appreciate that. Let's go ahead and open up the show with our first topic here. And let's go on and share it on the screen. The final top 25 is wrong. Now, this happened last week, and I get it. Some of you would like to be a part of this. Some, you know, you'd like to see what's going on. The college football AP top 25 is just flat wrong. Like the last ranking that they put out, I get that everybody has a different method for how they want to rank teams, but there is a difference between ranking and rating, right? And while some people may not think it matters, I disagree. An end-of-the-year poll is not exactly necessary once we've got a playoff or a national champion. Like, if you're not first, you're last. I think that's very basic stuff, right? But if you look at it, how about this? I look at it like this. If you're going to do something, do it right. I think that's the easiest way to go about it. There's multiple examples in this, but we'll start near the top, right? You see right here, we've got Notre Dame number two. I think that's kind of lazy. Oregon is the only team in the country to finish with only one loss. They actually have a win over the national champs. They have several of the same wins as Notre Dame, and they don't have a loss to Northern Illinois. So I think Oregon should be second over Notre Dame. You start moving down the list, number four and number six. We've got Texas ranked four. We got Georgia ranked number six. Did we not see that game twice? Georgia won both of those, 30-15 Georgia in Austin, 22-19 in overtime in the SEC championship game. Georgia did only finish with 11 wins, but the strength of schedule, the playoff paths were completely different. So Georgia should absolutely be ahead of Texas. You keep moving down the list, and let's go to SMU. SMU is number 12, BYU is number 13, and Clemson is number 14. Both number 13 and number 14 beat SMU at number 12. So in my opinion, they both should be, not even opinion, they both should be ranked ahead of the Mustangs. I don't see much of a difference between the two teams, or really between the three. Clemson played a much tougher schedule than BYU. regardless, you can't have SMU ranked ahead of both of them. It doesn't make any sense. The Mustangs don't have a single big win on their resume, and they didn't beat either of the teams that are ranked behind them. So you got to move Clemson and BYU above SMU, period. Continuing on down, let's keep it moving. Number 18, Miami. They finished the year 10-3. That's the same record as Syracuse, who was ranked two spots behind them. And if Syracuse closed out the regular season with a win over Miami, wouldn't that stand to reason that the Orange should be ranked ahead of Miami? I mean, they beat them on the field. And I understand it was at home and whatnot, but it was the game that kept Miami out of the college football playoff. You know, I think head-to-head wins have to mean something when you rank teams, especially if they're close. Like, rankings are not power ratings. And no, it doesn't take a lot of homework to know these things. Like, just get your ballot ready before the national title game. You won't have to rush through it and look foolish. Because honestly, to me, this kind of stuff looks kind of foolish. So, is what it is. Next on the docket, the ACC. Yes. What are the biggest takeaways from the ACC 2025 college football schedule release so far? The full ACC schedule is not going to be released until 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. But they gave us a bit of a look ahead last week. Right. Let's go on and share this on the screen. First off, this is brilliant. Here, we'll make me smaller so you can see this better. This is brilliant. I mean, the schedule release is going to be from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on the ACC network and on ESPN2. Waiting until after the national championship game and right before the old signing day, before spring practice starts for everybody. This is exactly what every other conference should be doing as well. We should be getting 2 to 3 finalized conference schedules per week after the CFP National Championship game. There's no rush in this. We already know who the opponents are going to be. It's kind of like the NFL thing. The college football power brokers should be using stuff like this to promote the sport, like get people talking about it when they normally would not be. Instead of the SEC and the Big Ten releasing their full schedule for next season while games are still being played, they should be doing this, in my opinion. And so, anyway, we already knew the opening week matchups. There are some interesting ones on here. Let's move over to that. All right, so week 0 and week 1 games. Stanford at Hawaii in week 0 was interesting. Like, it just is. ECU versus NC State, I mean, that's a rematch from their bowl game. It's an in-state rival, and it's the opening Thursday. So, yeah, we're going to be pretty excited about that one. LSU at Clemson. Alabama at Florida State, Georgia Tech at Colorado, and then Syracuse at Tennessee, or not at Tennessee, but versus Tennessee. All of those should get a lot of eyeballs on opening Saturday. And then, of course, you move into Sunday. I mean, good gracious, Notre Dame at Miami, that's going to be an incredible scene. Virginia Tech against South Carolina, that's got a chance to be must-see. And then on Monday night, I mean, good gracious, TCU visiting Chapel Hill for Bill Belichick's debut at North Carolina. I mean, that is, again, this is must-see TV. On Friday, the conference gave us, here we go, moving over to that. The conference gave us all of the conference openers. And there were a couple of things that stood out. First of all, Florida State opened 2024 with a week 0 conference game and a week 1 conference game. They went 0-2. They were immediately 0-2 in conference. They were behind the 8-ball. It was a disaster, right? And not that this team was going to get any better, but there was no chance to get in the groove. So, this year they opened the conference slate with Virginia in week 5. Like, there's no more getting behind the 8-ball for the Seminoles in conference. They are going to have plenty of time to get the ship righted before they get into conference play. Another thing that I noticed, North Carolina, SMU, and Miami do not open conference play until week 6. Let's see. Move it down here just a little bit. There you go. Miami plays at Florida State, SMU is hosting Syracuse, and North Carolina is hosting Clemson for their conference openers. I mean, that's all the way in October. It's the first weekend in October, and that's when they're playing. So just absolutely absurd on that. Cal, let me look at it. There we go. Okay, Cal, Florida State, Louisville, Pitt, and Virginia Tech. They aren't playing until week 5. Excuse me. The biggest thing is that there's no conference matchups until week 3. So every single team is going to get a chance to get their feet wet before having to navigate the conference waters. I also noticed this. There's 3 different teams It's Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and North Carolina that have to open their conference slate by playing Clemson. That's not how you want to open conference play. At least not in my opinion. I am excited to talk more on Thursday about what the rest of the schedule looks like after it comes out tonight. I'm probably going to be posting about it on X before that, so you can follow me on @GaryWCE over there. Right quick, let's knock out one of these ads, and then I'll be there on the other side.
We're proudly supported by Go Sleeves, the best kinesiology technology on the market. Go Sleeves' patented compression sleeves, socks, and more increase blood flow and lymphatic flow to help your body recover, manage pain, and maintain peak performance. Right now, you can save 15% by going to GoSleeves.com/WCE or by using the promo code WCE on their site. Go Sleeves. It's go time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All right. Carrying on. Penn State hired away Ohio State's defensive coordinator. Jim Knowles, who was an excellent DC at Duke and then at Oklahoma State before completely changing the trajectory of Ohio State's defense into really what became a national title-winning unit, he is taking the defensive coordinator position at Penn State. And the number's massive. Right? Let's go and pull this up on the screen so you can see. From what I've seen, he's getting $3.1 million per year for 3 years, guaranteed. So $9.3 million to coach defense. I mean, it makes sense. Like, here's the deal. He's from Philly. So you can understand the move, kind of, right? All the talk during the playoffs had been him taking over the defense at Oklahoma under Brent Venables, which was kind of weird considering the issue with Oklahoma this year was their offense, not their defense. And Brent Venables is a defensive guy, but that's a story for another day. We can talk about Venables more as we go on. Rumors are out there that Ohio State was willing to offer $2.75 million per year. So why would you not run it back? Right? At the end of that contract, you're talking about $1 million difference, which, I mean, yes, that's a lot of money. But when you're talking like $8.25 million compared to $9.3 over 3 years, that's not a lot, you know. How about this? There's not a lot that he could buy with nine that he couldn't get with eight. So naturally, you got to think there was something else going on. There was certainly talk about him and Larry Johnson not getting along regarding scheme as far as the defensive line. But who knows what else could have been going on there. Regardless, he was there for 3 years. They got better on defense every single year. And, you know, it is what it is. He's going to be losing a ton of senior leadership off this team. So if you were ever going to go out with your boys, this would be the time. Like Knowles, sir, he reached the mountaintop at Ohio State. He won a national championship. His defenses have improved their yards per play ranking every single year since he took over Oklahoma State. That's six straight years. Ohio State, I believe they finished top 15 for the last 4 years. That includes a year at Oklahoma State and then 3 years at Ohio State. Ohio State finished the season number one in yards per play metric. Like, there's no way to go higher at Ohio State. If he wants to continue the streak, like, Penn State's going to have to finish top five because they were number six in yards per play on defense. I'll tell you, the move did not surprise me when I heard the money attached to it. The thing that did surprise me was the money. Because we live in a world where, you know, West Virginia just gave their new head coach, Rich Rodriguez, a contract that's worth less than $4 million a year. Because the rest of the money is going to be going towards NIL. Because you got to pay players now, right? James Franklin already makes $8.5 million. You toss on Andy Kotelnicki, and he makes $1.8 million per year. The new DC, Knowles, he's getting $3.1 million. So at that point, you're at $13.4 million annually before you ever get to support staff or on-field assistants or NIL. Now, yeah, it seems like a lot. I get that. It's not totally absurd, though. Georgia pays Kirby Smart $13 million by himself. But when all the talk has been about how schools, you know, need more money to be able to pay players and how coaching salaries are going to drop, this became a bit of a surprise, right? Penn State is basically saying, Like, there's no more excuses. Franklin has a top offensive coordinator, a top defense coordinator. They've got the resources to go get an incredible roster. They already had one. If Penn State can't find a way to win a national title with Jim Knowles calling the defense, I really don't know what else there is left for James Franklin to do at this point. I don't know what else he could do. Now, over to the Ohio State side. Who do they hire to replace Knowles? Right? Dan Hope at 11 Warriors, he put out a list of names as soon as the Knowles news was kind of being widely reported. So, you know, let's go through who he has listed here. And let's take a look. All right, so he said internal candidates, Matt Guerrieri, he's the safeties coach. And I'll go ahead and tell you, this is who I think is going to get it. It says the early rumor is that Guerrieri could be the leading candidate to replace Knowles, which makes Day's comments about Guerrieri during Sunday's national championship celebration seem notable. Quote, one of the brightest minds in college football, and I'm telling you, a star in the making, Day said while introducing Guerrieri to the crowd. Yeah. Guerrieri was brought to Ohio State because of his ability to coach Knowles' system, which could make him a natural heir apparent if the Buckeyes choose to prioritize continuity. They do have multiple guys in the secondary. And, you know, Caleb Downs plays safety. He's the one that most closely worked with Guerrieri. You've got multiple guys coming back in that secondary that I think would appreciate this. It does make sense, right? It does make sense when you really, really think about it. I am certain they're going to move quickly on this. But looking at some of the other ones, Tim Walton is the secondary coach. He's been a defense coordinator before in the NFL, in college as well. Local possibilities or logical possibilities, excuse me, Jim Leonard, who is the defensive Broncos defensive pass game coordinator. Remember, he was at Wisconsin. People thought that he was going to get the Wisconsin head coaching job. He was the interim, and they chose to go with Luke Fickell instead. And never mind. It says that Leonard has elected to remain in Denver after receiving interest from several NFL teams for defensive coordinator jobs. So, okay. So that one's probably not going to happen here. Let's see. Bates. Yeah, Randy Bates, who is the Pittsburgh defense coordinator. He's an Ohio State alum. That might would make sense. I mean, obviously, Pat Narduzzi's defenses are really good. Gerard Mayo, former New England Patriots head coach. John Heacock, Iowa State defense coordinator. Mike Tressel, Wisconsin defense coordinator. And then it says, worth a call, none of these are going to happen. None of these are happening. Jeff Hafley, Packers defense coordinator. He just left Boston College last year. Don't think that's going to happen. Luke Fickell, Wisconsin head coach. He makes over $8 million a year. That's not happening. Phil Parker, Iowa defensive coordinator. He's been with Kirk Ferentz forever. So that's not happening. Glenn Schumann, Georgia defense coordinator. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. Like, I don't see how any of these are going to happen. Just a guess. All right. Let's swap it up. College football playoff championship viewership dropped, and it dropped quite a bit. Ohio State versus Notre Dame averaged 22.1 million viewers. That was down 12% from last season's championship game. That was Michigan versus Washington, and that hit 25 million. The crazy thing about this, like, Michigan versus Washington was actually down from the Alabama-Michigan Rose Bowl semifinal last season. That averaged over 27 million viewers. Ohio State-Notre Dame was the third lowest audience of the 11 CFP title games. All three of those have happened in the last 5 years. This is only the second of the last 5 years where the title game has been the most watched game of the season. It's kind of surprising, right? In 2020, the New Year's Day Clemson versus Ohio State Sugar Bowl, it did 19.15 million. Bama's 52-24 win over the Buckeyes drew only 18.7 million. In 2022, Georgia versus Ohio State did 22.45 million on New Year's Eve in the Peach Bowl. In Georgia's 65-7 win over TCU, it only did 17.2 million. So blowouts, obviously, big part of this. Last year's Rose Bowl with Bama and Michigan went to overtime, 27-20 final score. It did 27.76 million viewers. That was the third most watched game of the CFP era. So how do we fix the issue? Like, I do not expect it to be resolved anytime soon, but this is how I would make sure to have the bigger numbers. Even amidst all the cord cutting, et cetera, the biggest problem is the fact that the past five championship games have had an average margin of 25.4 points. Like, this one was close at the end, But I think a lot of people turned their TVs off when Ohio State went up 28-7 to start the third quarter, and then they got the ball right back and kicked a field goal. So 31-7, most of the audience was already lost. Like, blowouts do not keep viewers. It may not necessarily matter, right? ESPN paid more. They got more from the CFP. The viewership for last year's New Year's 6-plus CFP title game was 104.13 million. That was a total of seven games, so you had an average viewership of 14.88 million. This year's 11 playoff games drew 172.12 million for an average of 15.65 million. So ESPN got 68 million more viewers for the playoff than they did on the CFP and the bowls last year, but they only averaged about 770,000 more viewers per game. Is that worth the additional money that ESPN paid for it? I don't know that, right? So let's go through how I would fix this issue, because Super Bowl blowouts don't lose viewers. Like, why? Because people schedule around it. It doesn't have to fit into a schedule. People schedule for it. And that takes us to number one, which is fix the calendar. Easy. The Super Bowl kicks off every single year on a Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It is done by 10 p.m. Eastern time every year. It's on a day when people are typically off work. It's late enough that you can get things done beforehand. And by God, it's on the same day that most regular season games are played throughout the season. Every Sunday from September through the first weekend in February, there are NFL games on. No matter if it's a holiday, anything else. It's Sunday, that means the NFL is on. College football from August through December is on Saturdays. Every single Saturday, there is a game on. And then we get to the playoffs, and we started with playoff games on Saturday, but then we had games on Tuesday, December 31st, Wednesday, January 1st, and we even had one pushed back to Thursday, January 2nd. And then we had semifinal games on Thursday, January 9th and Friday, January 10th. And then we had the championship game on Monday, January 20th. Casual fans could not keep up with when the games were on, especially if they don't always watch ESPN. Like, I would just as soon say damn the bowl format and damn New Year's Day. Like, we can have bowl games on those days, but the playoff games should be on Saturdays going forward. Every playoff round should be on Saturdays. I think fans will be willing to watch college football over in the NFL. Or they'll be somewhere that they've got multiple TVs to be able to watch both games. I know networks likely won't go for that, but it is an idea. Just tossing it out there. Also, the end of the regular season was November 30th. The playoff didn't start until December 21st. Like, the NFL regular season ended one weekend, and the playoffs started the next weekend. I know that we've got championship games. Right? Like, the championship game for the CFP was held 59 days after the end of the regular season. Like, that is insanity. Even if you say that it was held 52 days after the conference championship games, it is still absurd because the NFL regular season ended January 5th. The Super Bowl is on February 9th. That's about a month. It's not that crazy. Like, you can get these games in, but there's so many pockets to fill and mouths to feed and viewership to try and attain by scheduling on these weird days. I hate it. I hate all of it. Either way, let's move to number two. Get more than one network involved. ESPN bought the exclusive rights to the CFP, to the college football playoff. So they've got the deal for the next 7 years. But after the contract is over, I would make sure first that the over-the-air networks are involved, that the broadcast networks are involved. Like, I honestly thought that you remember the Alliance? You guys remember that? Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, they joined up to block CFP expansion a few years ago. And I thought the Alliance was put together by the Big Ten, really, to get Fox a seat at the table for the CFP. But apparently that was not the case. Once the college football regular season was over, you never saw the sport mentioned again on Fox Sports, on CBS, on NBC, because why would they? They got no stakes in this thing. After December 1st, at most, those channels had one bowl game between non-elite teams. There was no reason for them to talk about the college football playoff. Now, I hate to mention the NFL again, but for their playoffs, they've got a game on Amazon, on ESPN and ABC. Remember the simulcast thing? That's something that should be happening. starting in 2027, I believe that the championship game is going to be simulcast on ABC. So the ratings will probably get better, but it's so late in the calendar. Anyway, they had games on Amazon, on ESPN, ABC. They had games on CBS, NBC, and Fox. And all networks are contractually obligated to promote what channel the other games are on. Aside from Amazon, they're all over-the-air networks. You don't have to have any kind of subscription to watch those channels. You can get them with rabbit ears. Even cord cutters can watch these for free, and they do, in very high numbers. Like the Texans versus Chiefs divisional round playoff game that was simulcast on ESPN and ABC did 33.8 million viewers for one playoff game. Like the national championship game in college football on a Monday that was only on ESPN, it did 22.1 million. So you've got a divisional round playoff game versus the national, like the Super Bowl of this sport, and it outdrew it by more than 11 million viewers. That's just insane. Like, could you imagine if the college football playoff was on ABC, CBS, and Fox? Like, we could even leave out NBC if you want to. But imagine those three networks all advertising every CFP game. Like, this is an easy one. Get more networks involved. That's more advertising. That's more people watching. That's more people knowing when the championship game is going to be. And then number three, the last one, at least for now, better coordinate promotion of the sport. Like, this sounds complicated, but it's really not. Like, for some reason, the SEC and the Big Ten announced their entire schedules back in the middle of the season for no reason. The ACC, we talked about it earlier, they have created 3 days of content. They did it on a Thursday and a Friday so people could talk about it through the weekend. And then on Monday, so you've got the rest of the week to talk about it. They created 3 days of content with the way they released their schedules. Like, getting everyone on the same page when it comes to announcing talent acquisitions, like recruiting in the portal, when it comes to announcing schedules or marquee non-conference matchups, those things should not just be announced randomly by the schools. The conferences should be putting together the news cycle to keep people talking about the sport in the times that they normally would not. Now, do I think any of this happens anytime soon? Not likely at all. Like, everybody is only worried about themselves. But if you want to know how the NFL continues to peak, this is how they do it. The news cycle is never ending for those guys. And college football could be the same. They could draw at least half. At least half of what, instead of a fourth, they should be able to do at least half of what the NFL does. And yet, they just cannot get out of their own way. It's very, very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. Let's hit one more ad real quick, and then we'll wrap things up on the other side. Tickets to everything are expensive these days, and I know you're like me. You want to catch a big game or a concert, maybe even tickets to a show. Why not save some money every time you buy tickets? Visit TicketSmarter.com or use the TicketSmarter mobile app and use the promo code WCE10, that's WCE10, to save $10 on any order of $100 or more, or use WCE20, that's WCE20, to save $20 on an order of $300 or more. It's not a one-time sign-up bonus or anything. Seriously, every time you buy tickets, you can save money on already great deals. So do yourself a favor. Think smarter with Ticket Smarter. All right, let's hit on one more topic for today. There's a meeting in New Orleans in a few weeks where we could see potentially massive changes coming to the college football playoff format. And Ross Dellinger wrote about it over at Yahoo Sports. Let's pull this up. There we go. All right. College football's two most powerful conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. They are scheduled to hold a pivotal meeting on February 19th in New Orleans. And it might sound like just another gathering of athletic directors and whatnot, but this meeting could lay the groundwork for, I mean, some pretty seismic changes in the sport, right? You got topics ranging from the future of the CFP, the playoff, to revenue sharing models, now that the House deal looks like it's going to go through. And the discussions that happen at this meeting are likely going to change college football for years to come. I mean, this is a huge, huge meeting. So here's what's on the table. One of the biggest talking points is the future of the CFP format. Starting in 2026, the SEC and the Big Ten believe they're going to have significant influence over changes to the system, to CFP, et cetera. And let's be honest. I mean, these two conferences hold most of the cards because When the new deal was put together in 2023, they were able to do away with needing a unanimous vote from all the conferences in order to get changes done. Like, perfect example, there was talk about changing the seeding to better reflect the rankings, right? The number three seed this year was Boise State. They were number nine in the rankings, and the number four seed was Arizona State, the number 12 team. Everybody agrees that it is a better playoff, a more fair playoff, if the top four teams are the ones that get the byes. But the other conferences outside the SEC and the Big Ten see that there is an advantage for their conference champions there, so they're voting against it. It's got to be unanimous. So for this coming season, the top four conference champs are going to get byes again, and it's going to look goofy again, and we'll just have to deal with it. Anyway, the SEC and the Big Ten, aside from this, they may push for even bigger changes starting in 2026. You've got a potential 14-team playoff structure that's being floated, one that really could give these two conferences up to four automatic bids each. And the way that this would work, let's take that down here. The way it would work is the ACC and the Big 12 would get two apiece. The Big 10 and the SEC get four apiece. You'd have a single spot reserved for the top group of five champion. The final at-large spot would likely be earmarked for Notre Dame if they finish ranked high enough. So your model is going to be a 4-4-2-2-1+1 model, and that would provide a clearer path for, honestly, like powerhouse programs, while it does reshape the postseason landscape. Obviously, this format is not without its critics. The idea of granting multiple automatic qualifiers to a single conference, it could devalue conference championship games. And that's another topic that's going to be brought up. If they're granted multiple AQ bids, there's most likely going to be changes to championship weekend. And I've talked about this before. The most valuable asset that college football owns is inventory. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips brought up that they might change their format so that the team that finishes number one in the conference standings after the regular season is going to sit out conference championship weekend. And basically, they'll turn it into a play-in weekend where number two plays number three for a slot in the playoff. In the SEC and the Big Ten, if you have four automatic bids, you could let the top two teams sit out, and then you have play-in games between number three and number six and number four and number five. So you're just expanding the playoff from 14 teams to 26, which I think pretty much everybody would be okay with. I mean, you thought there was a lot of people still in the discussion this year. I imagine if we get to where the sixth place team in the Big Ten and the SEC has a shot at going to the playoff. And people want to talk about it devaluing the regular season, That ship has sailed. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. We've got more teams that will be available and interested in their fan bases, will have hope, et cetera. Like, we know who's going to win the national championship. It's a handful of teams every year, and it's based on talent. Who has got the most good players, period. And it could deal with injuries and everything else, too. Like, there's no telling. So there are a lot of teams that could win it. But regardless, of course, the discussion, let's get back on track here. The discussion in New Orleans is not just going to be about playoff spots. It's also about money. The NCAA and the major conferences are moving towards a revenue-sharing model that's tied to the House antitrust settlement. So starting in 2026, schools are going to be required to distribute NIL pay directly to athletes. And it's got a cap of at least $20.5 million annually. And that's from the school directly to student-athletes. It's a massive shift. And it is creating, you know, some financial and logistical challenges for a lot of programs across the country trying to figure this out. How are we going to do this? And then, of course, there was the thing from the Department of Education right before the inauguration a couple weeks or last week, whenever it was, saying that, hey, you have to distribute this evenly, Title IX, blah, blah, blah. You get the point. Adding to the complexity, of course, you've got a new enforcement arm that's going to oversee agreements between athletes and third parties. Any NIL deal that's over $600 has to be reported. Otherwise, it becomes a violation. I don't know who on earth is going to actually... I don't know who's going to enforce any of this stuff. The NCAA has just kind of said, we're good. Doesn't matter. Anyway, Title IX, of course, the Department of Justice objections have thrown a little more uncertainty into the mix for the House settlement. For athletic departments, this is uncharted territory. I mean, the stakes are really, really high for this, so they got to get this stuff right. But who knows what they're going to end up doing? Who knows? Beyond the CFP and revenue sharing, the SEC and the Big Ten are exploring ways to maximize revenue and of course, reimagine the college football calendar. There is talk of like reshaping postseason play for teams outside of the playoff and, you know, possibly scheduling some regular season matchups between these two leagues, which would help their TV partners with TV ratings, et cetera. And it all makes sense if they have automatic bids to the playoff based on conference standings. If these non-conference games don't necessarily matter towards the playoff, and all they really do is matter with the ranking, which would deal with seeding, et cetera, that could help. The SEC also is still debating adding a ninth conference game starting in 2026. They're probably going to need some additional revenue from ESPN, and they're going to want those auto bids to the CFP to make it happen. Like, let's just call it what it is. Like, there is no reason for the SEC to schedule more difficult games right now based on what they saw this year. SMU got in, had 11 wins against a bunch of nobodies. There was not a single great win on the schedule. There was not one big win that they had. They lost to the two best teams that they played, and it did not affect them at all. So if all we're doing is counting wins and losses, there's no reason to schedule anything difficult. There's no reason to go to nine unless you get automatic bids. The February 19th meeting, it's going to set the stage for the CFP commissioners gathering in Dallas the following week. And that's what this is all about. Like, Big Ten and SEC, go in here, get your ducks in a row, and then go to the CFP meeting after that. And you're going to have more decisions there about the playoffs, governance structure, the format, et cetera. All that stuff is going to continue there. For fans, the big question really is going to be pretty simple. Are the changes going to make college football better, or will they tip the scales even further towards the SEC and the Big Ten? And maybe that's good. Like, one thing is for sure, when these two conferences meet up, the rest of the sport does take notice. Keep an eye on what happens here in a few weeks. Change is coming. Change is absolutely coming. All right. Let's wrap this thing up. We've been at it for 35 minutes, and it's a solo show. I'm sure you guys are tired of me. If you haven't already, remember, this show is free. And all I ask are three things. Number one, like the video. It's that button right there. Hit that thumbs up button. Number two, subscribe to the channel or the podcast. Like, the more that number grows, the more it helps put us in front of more people. And then number three, tell your friends about the show, right? Whether that's by sharing it on social media or just telling your buddy at the bar about the show, all that stuff matters. And I greatly appreciate those of you that are already doing it. If you want to support the show, you can become a member at bettingcfb.com. It's $5 a month, $50 for the year, or you can even just toss in donations if you don't want to be a member and you would rather just toss me some money to help keep the gear updated, etc. Because I got all kinds of crap around me. I appreciate you guys that are already in there and they're sticking with me now that the season's done. We're doing some college basketball stuff over there right now, and I know it says betting CFB, but I do college basketball numbers. So I'm tossing them over there first for the overnight stuff, and then I'll post them on Twitter afterwards, just so everybody can see what happens. And it's just the models. If I've got college basketball bets, I'll toss them in there too. But I do bonus podcasts as well, all kinds of different stuff. All the CFP future stuff, CFP stuff, college football futures and whatnot, all of my projections, et cetera, as I'm prepping to preview this stuff, it'll all be over there at bettingcfb.com. Also, there is a link in the description. Make sure that you don't forget to subscribe to the BetUS College Football Show. We're going to have stuff over there pretty soon, I would imagine. We got some meetings to take care of, but stay tuned. The BetUS College Football Show. All right, you guys are fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Thanks for taking some time out of your Monday to hang out with me. And I'll see you all again right here on Thursday night. We're going to have a good time. I might be bringing in guests here and there. We'll see. But till then, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Of course, God bless college football and hopefully all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for listening to Winning Cures Everything. Make sure and follow me on Twitter at GaryWCE. If you want to toss in a question, you can email me Gary@winningcureseverything.com. Make sure and hit that subscribe button and we'll see you next time.
Oh,
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.